Explain to me why it is more noble to kill 10,000 men in battle than a dozen at dinner.
Welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
Know who that was?
That was Cheryl from Archer.
Ooh, good call. She would have been way more excited, though.
It's a fancy dinner party.
I love the fancy dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Tywin. It was definitely Tywin.
It's always Tywin.
Not always. Right. Last week was not Tywin. I think it was, like, Davos.
Whatever.
No, it wasn't. Last week was the one from the earlier books. The prequel stuff.
Oh, okay, my bad. Week before then.
Yeah.
It was actually Axel Florent, now that I'm looking at it. I scrolled up here. It was in a Davos chapter.
Hey, want a question that the answer isn't Simon? Who shits gold?
This is a tough one. I feel like I should know it. Nobody.
Yeah, it is not, in fact, Tywin Lannister.
Oh.
That was a surprise. I did not see that one coming.
Oh, patricide. You never get dull.
It's always fun.
I think that's one of the best things about Thrones, and I think they mentioned the show even, is all the weird sides that exist.
Yeah.
Killing brothers, killing dads, killing whoever.
Jaime and Tyrion have a conversation about that in Tyrion's cell. They're trying to figure stuff out. Don't they wind up deciding that there's no word for cousin killing?
I believe so, yeah.
Which is interesting, because doesn't Jaime kill one of his cousins?
With his chains.
Yeah. Well, there's no word for it. It might as well not have happened.
He's not a Kinslayer then, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, who are you?
I'm Will, sometimes known as Kenan.
I am Daryl, sometimes known as Daryl.
I'm Aaron, and Pulse Glazer.
Konnichiwa, bitches!
You know, I really do have to give Kyle credit for sticking with it. If I was him, even I would have gotten tired of that by now.
Oh, I am. I'm so done. But Ben's always like, I keep thinking that this will be the week that you stop, and so, like, immensely I write it off, and you do it. And I'm like, fuck you, Kyle.
Bingo.
So it lives on. As long as I'm pissing someone off somewhere, you just gotta keep going.
Living the dream, man. Well then, speaking of living the dream, I think more cards fulfills that for me. Now, we've got a sweet new announcement from FFG on the Veil Man, which should be, what, pack 3 of the next cycle? Just always frustrating that it's so freaking far out, but it's still cool to get some spoilers. So, let's see, what do we got here? We've got a spread, several cards we can't see much of. But we've definitely got a couple that we can see either all or almost all of. One of you guys want to lay that Veil Informant on us?
Okay, sure. I'll take Veil Informer. Veil Informant. It is a 2-cost neutral, 1 strength, intrigue and power icons. It has stealth. Veil Informant gains +1 strength for each plot card in your use pile.
That's kind of cool. Reminds me of the old What were they, Erie Bowman?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. There were and there was a Baratheon character that did almost the same thing, right? As far as getting stronger, the more plots you had back in that same CCG set, right?
Yep.
You guys are old.
It's a cool concept. I mean, they're a weenie that you don't mind seeing early game, but late game can become huge. It reminded me of, like, the fanatical followers in Draft just become these stupid monsters for real cheap.
Yeah. I kind of dig the idea. You know, it plays around with the whole making plots more impactful thing.
So, like, it's not really... It's good for setup, but it's not great for setup. It's fairly well-balanced.
Even as an ally, you know, I think there'd be decks I'd want to play around with it in. Kind of stinks that it's neutral again. I mean, I understand for House Aaron, but the game's already getting kind of gray, shall we say.
Okay, go on to the next one, guys.
We've also got that Silence Crewman. Anybody want him? We can almost read all of him.
Yeah, let's see what we can get. Another 2-for-2 military intrigue stealth raider. So, like Aaron said, another 2 slot. At the end of any challenge in which Silence Crewman blank not declared as an attacker, blank and discard the top 2, I'm going to say, guess cards of the opponent's deck. I mean, that's kind of what has to go there.
Yeah, so, but there has to be more to it than just, like, anything he doesn't attack, and otherwise it's a free discard 6 from the top each turn.
Yeah, but I don't know what else they could possibly fit in there. There's not much room.
Kneel him, too?
Kneel and discard the top 2 cards from an opponent's deck? Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's not a huge drawback either.
I hope Mill gets good, though. Mill good would be really cool.
And he would. But again, you have to remember, I'm withholding judgment on a lot of these cards. I mean, Aaron kind of touched on it earlier. I mean, these are going to exist in a world after whatever rotation we come up with. So I'm sure Greyjoy is going to lose some mill effects. So while he may be just as strong as you can kind of see him being, that effect is going to exist in a world without maybe Frostfang Peaks or some of the other mill effects that we see a lot.
I mean, I'm not sure I care about the mill at all. Can we focus on the fact for a moment that he's a 2-for-2 military and intrigue in Greyjoy with stealth and only the raider trait, no negative trait? Like, that seems pretty awesome. I can think of Greyjoy decks I would play that in with no other text.
See, I don't know if I can. Greyjoy's gotten so crowded. Maybe not at the 2-cost. It doesn't have a lot of 2-cost. But 2-cost is one of those where, like, 1 or 2 cost, there's not much of a difference. And Greyjoy has a lot of shit to play at 1 cost.
Well, it does, but it's not a lot of intrigue stuff. This guy is really going to push across those intrigue challenges.
Fair. All right. Next card.
Well, we've got 3 here that we can't really read much of. One of which, Sir Ilan Payne, has already been spoiled, and we talked about him. We've also got the Storm's End Free Rider, which all we can see is he's another Bannerman, as well as being an ally. And he's... What's that?
One more important thing. He's got a Kneel of One Influence effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's always cool.
Which is interesting. I like seeing a little bit more of a resurgence of influence, because it's still, you know, certain houses can just completely ignore it. And even in Baratheon, unless you're building a very specific Baratheon deck, you can completely ignore it. So I like to see that spread around a bit.
And anyone want to try and pronounce that name?
Jiqui? I don't know.
Works. Yeah.
Yeah.
But why is she white?
I'm going to go with cultural bias.
Yeah.
I like her New Jersey, like, half bleach weave thing going on.
Right? Like, who thought that was Jiqui?
They can't do a good dye job in the, like, 11th century or whatever this is roughly.
Hey, but they can get a perm.
Yeah, evidently.
Jiqui's got a cool, if you would be killed, you may do something, so that's at least always semi-interesting.
Yeah.
If she would be killed, Daenerys Targaryen remains broken.
Some kind of, effect. Who knows?
You see something with the word attach on there. I see ATC.
Uh-oh. Character agenda.
I doubt.
No,
yeah,
maybe.
I doubt too, but that
maybe just
if cool it like attachment. Became
maybe a dupe or something.
Yeah, something
that'd be cool.
Where, I mean, the handmaidens are there to help her, so if somehow they like souped up whoever they died for or helped. Like, that'd be kind of neat. I don't know. I'm trying.
I'd be down with that.
I don't know. There's a challenge at the end, and there's a does at the end, it seems. So
all kinds of texts. Doing all kinds of...
Yeah.
Whatever. One for one.
Well, what else do we have? We've got another one that we can actually see. Daryl, you want to throw that one at us?
Dude, heck yeah. Are we talking about Nymeria Sand?
Yes, sir.
Aw, yeah. All right, so she's Martell, 3-cost, 3-strength, military intrigue, Sand Snake, and a bastard. With a limited response, after a Sand Snake character you control is killed, choose and kill a character with an equal or lower printed cost. Limit one limited response per round.
Can we just talk about that art for a minute?
We're in here duking it out for top dirty girl right now.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Which, do we know which one she is? Does anyone remember who Nymeria is?
Which Sand Snake?
Yeah.
I think, isn't she the one that is the really ladylike one that is being sent to King's Landing now?
Sure, apparently the really ladylike one means the fuck against a pillar one.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're comparing her to, like, Obara, doesn't take much.
That's a fair point. So, Obara, who wants to stab you.
Yes.
So I've been wanting to make, what was it called, Bronze Shield playable for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, just maybe, this is the scenario right here. Blood for Blood also, so you get a little 2-for-1 action.
I mean, I like nice. That she's a walking blood for blood, and at the moment, I mean, I know limited response is a thing they're pushing again in this cycle, but at the moment, it's not really up against any competition in Martell, so...
War Scorpion, just so you know. The only other limited response in Martell.
So it's not really up against any competition, so I kind of dig it. You know, even if nothing else, Nymeria kills someone else on her way out, which... I would think about for some decks, but, you know, maybe this will give the needed teeth to a Sand Snake theme deck.
I mean, with Harrenhal out, too, I mean, it's just...
Yeah. You know. That's not bad.
So, they seem to be pushing Sand Snake Bloodthirst, because Southron Eris from Lasset and Obara Sand are both Sand Snakes that get huge bonuses for having less in play. That
yeah.
With this.
Granted, if you just want to lost one of your dudes and then make your opponent lose one of theirs... I don't know, I guess the character count stays where it was, but leaving that character in play on your opponent's side sure helps the Bloodthirst thing a whole lot more.
Yeah, but if it's happening, Obara also hits anyone with up to 5 strength if you had fewer to begin with. Because she gets the +2 strength when you have fewer characters in play.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, she, I mean, my thought here, it's kind of like the old 10-for-10 hits the Viper. I mean, Nymeria can kill Dani all by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wait, a bunch of strength Sand Snakes out.
It's cost, not strength. It's cost.
That's awesome. So just, that's the 3-cost hate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
We got even more Sand Snake support.
Yeah, we do. Let's see, what's the next one? I guess it's probably around to me to read, huh? We've got a Martell location this time. It's unique. 1-drop, Red Mountain Keep. It's a stronghold and dominance. Kneel Red Mountain Keep to shuffle a Sand Snake character in from your dead pile back into your deck. Historically, this type of thing, not great. Not great, but I haven't seen all the other cards yet, so maybe once all these Sand Snake pieces come into play, maybe you'll want to just play a bunch of copies of the unique ones and keep killing them off and shuffling them back into your deck so you can play another dupe. I don't know. You can only do one per turn, though, so you still got to be careful.
Kind of interesting. I mean, I get that they're kind of, you know, they're wanting to push Sand Snakes and whatnot, but I would have liked to see this card come down that just is like a unique Martell character instead. I think that just would have given a little more versatility. But, I mean, I don't know if that location is supposed to be thematic with Sand Snakes only or anything like that, but that's what I would have liked to make it a little more playable, but maybe in this future set it'll be better.
I think Martell has plenty of versatile, efficient locations, characters, attachments, and events. I don't know if giving him another one right now is necessarily the best, but...
No, I mean, how efficient is this, though, in a meta where no one's playing dupes right now?
If it was your way, I'm saying.
Well, but you could play dupes with this, is kind of the point. You don't have to, like, especially with Sand Snakes. Stefan came to New York, Boston dude, came to New York with a Sand Snake deck that actually had a winning record running the whole Sand Snake, you know, that Valar Viper with the, blood, what's it called? The play all the Sand Snakes card?
No Use for Grief.
Yeah, with No Use for Grief. Like, there's ways to get that off reliably pretty regularly. And he just, like, if you had this and you didn't have to worry about your dudes dying, I don't see why this isn't any phase, because it's a little silly that it's dominance only, but it's a really good effect.
I don't know. I mean, I love Edmure Tully. Edmure Tully's awesome.
Oh, Edmure's kind of considerably more versatile.
Incredibly, you know, Edmure light, you know, but, yeah. I mean, Edmure even does, he does discard or dead pile, if I'm not mistaken.
And any player's pile.
Yeah.
I've definitely been in places where I wanted to shuffle something.
Shuffle that Desert Raider.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe with is better. Maybe we see more cards in the cycle. I don't know, but whatevs.
It's for one very specific deck. Just if that deck becomes solid, it becomes a good card.
I just think those decks are always running 3x of their Sand Snakes, and, like, on their No Use for Grief turn, they're just going to trip them up, and, like, if something happens to kill that Sand Snake, like, burn it down, there goes every copy of that Sand Snake anyways, so.
Well, what else did we get? I think we got one more Sand Snake-related card on here. An event.
I think this is back to me.
Yeah.
This is an opening gambit. Thales Martell only. Response. After you lose a challenge, choose a participating Sand Snake character you control to claim one power. Then, if this was the first challenge initiated that phase, stand that character and draw one card. That's
sweet.
A lot.
That is a lot of stuff.
Power, stand, draw.
I really dig that. I mean, I'm already a fan of chump attacks, and I'm a fan of the Martell event Deceit, which, you know, has some other versatility as well, but, you know, the opening gambit does a lot.
Imagine this in Dark Wings, Dark Words.
Yeah, that's perfectly acceptable if you've got the Sand Snake density in Dark Wings, Dark Words. Draw two, stand somebody, claim a power.
Draw two cards.
Yep.
It's a nice plot. Nice card.
Not too shabby. All right, well, maybe that's it for the Veil Men.
Now we're going to take a look at the Annals of Castle Black. That is Alex Hines, our ultimate rivals. Little card game DB focused place where you put all the stats for all the tournaments. It's very honestly the best resource this game has ever had. And we've got a ton to talk about going over the last regional season.
Yeah, a couple quick notes on that. I do want to give props to Alex, who took the idea of the spreadsheets that we'd done for Two Champs and a Chump for the last couple years and put it into the Google Docs so that anybody could update it and he could collate all these results, which was a brilliant innovation, and I'm kicking myself constantly for not having thought of that first. And also, I want to acknowledge that we're not quite done with the regional season. There's still a couple to go, but we wanted to go ahead and hit on some of these results and whatnot, so we could talk about that and the implications for the next FAQ before one drops, because honestly, one will be coming out any day, if previous results are any guide, and I kind of almost expect one to drop before regionals are completely finished.
Yeah, I fully expect next week around, it's been around, I think, the 23rd for the past couple of years. This released on Friday, and then we have Florida. And then the week before, both DC and the Battle at Blackwater Bay, I'm thinking just for time for Gen Con, for time for Canadian Nationals, it's going to be that week.
I think you're right.
So that's why we're talking about this now.
Yep.
First note, let's go over just what every house is doing. As far as how much they're played, Greyjoy, Targon, Lannister, as far as making the cut, are exactly as expected. Stark and Martell are way above the curve, and Baratheon is just not being played.
See, the way you worded that, though, as expected, though, this is still as expected to me. I continually expect to see Stark at the top and Martell and or Lannister right up there as well, because as weird as it is, it still kind of plays out that the European metas play pretty heavy Stark. The U.S., North American metas tend to play pretty heavy on the Martell and Lannister side. That's started to shift some as the, you know, as the information spreads more and more and Octagon kind of integrates things. But I personally still expect to see those right at the top.
Well, then Lannister is underperforming. But I don't mean based on, like, what we expect, because our expectations are always going to be biased.
Well,
I mean,
then don't say expect.
Well, no, I'm saying as expected based on the numbers of that house played. Like, the percentage of that house played and the percentage of the cut are very similar.
Hmm.
It's performing as expected. You think if half the field played Lannister and Lannister's balanced, half the cut will be Lannister.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what I meant. And that's very close. 16.2% overall, 17.2% for the cut. So, 1 percentage point difference is very close. Baratheon definitely drops a little from 10.3 to 8.1. Targ basically stays the same. Greyjoy basically stays the same. Stark gains, what, 2 percentage points? I'm rounding here a little bit. And Martell gains 4?
Yes, but
notable,
also,
but not excessive.
There's also qualification ratio, if we keep looking. And qualification ratio is suggesting that Martell and Stark are both overperforming. Martell even more than Stark.
Well, at what point is that overperformance a concern?
Oh, I didn't say it was concerning. It's just notable.
Okay, I was just wondering, you know, to mention that for listeners. That's what I'm saying. They're like the rate at which they're qualifying, while over baseline, is not where I would be concerned.
Sure, we'll to that point, until you get to winners. And the top winning percent is Martell at 28%.
Well, not that far ahead of Stark at 25.
Right, but Stark is generally more, well, about the same played to begin with. So Stark and Martell are both winning the far majority of events.
They are both performing very close to each other as we go across at these percentages.
Well, and 10% above or 13% above their nearest competitor.
Right. I mean, between the two of them, they have slightly over half of all the recorded wins. Now that may be worth noting. Well, that's definitely worth noting. That may be worth looking at. There we go.
One last weird note. Targ is being played about as much as Lannister and about as much as Greyjoy. But Baratheon has actually won more, and no one's playing Baratheon right now. So overall, no agenda is by far the most played, but it's not over underperforming. It's performing pretty much exactly where you'd think.
Considering that that's split between all six houses.
Right. We'll get to individual houses later, but that no agenda is just about, like, dead even is probably what you'd want from, like, no specific advantage or disadvantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and 30% seems healthy. I mean, Dothraki's not going to run it. There's some other stuff that's not going to run it. I mean, I like the thought that Northern Cataflanks aren't turned on all the time.
Yeah. And each of those no agenda decks will generally be quite different from others, depending on the house and such. So it doesn't seem like that is skewing, meta representation too much.
House agenda is definitely hard to track, but it's also got this weird similarity in cost curve. So, like, if you're running House of Dreams Aegon's Hill, or you're running House of Dreams Dragon Pit, you're going to run a lot of different cards, but a lot of the cards you have to run to have remotely reasonable setups are going to have to be the same in a way. So they're different, but they have a similarity in a weird way.
I'd agree to that to some extent. Your deck building definitely takes a different shift.
It's also overperforming by a fair amount. Whatever it is, it's doing very well.
Yeah, it gains a good margin in the cut, about 3 percentage points. And how's it looking on the win? It actually drops back down a couple percentage points. Actually, its win ratio is much closer to its overall representation. What, 11 to 12?
But once you get to the cut, you're fairly... I mean, there's an element that any good player will tell you. There's an element of randomness after the cut. The best player, or not the best player, the best deck at Worlds, everyone will tell you, from Simone to Alvaro, no answer for Greg's deck. Greg's Greyjoy Hollowhill was the best deck at Worlds, but it ran into a bad matchup and bad draw and flamed out in the top 16.
Yeah, that deck was, unfortunately, its own worst enemy.
But randomness exists, so does variance. Making the cut is a better representation of how things do, I think, than winning.
That's a reasonable argument, I think. You know, speaking of how the rest of these things do, I'm interested that a couple of the agendas that people have really claimed to be problem agendas have really dropped down this regional season. I mean, Knights of the Hollow Hill way down at 5% turnout, 5.4 in the cut, so right about on par. And Bloodthirst way down at 3.5 turnout, and now it does overrepresent in the cut at 6.4. It almost doubles itself. But that still leaves it, let's see, and overall it's what, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, okay, the 10th most popular agenda choice, counting the unknown block that we have here, unfortunately. And in the cut, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So it only moves up one place.
I don't think the agenda's so much a problem. I think people that know what they're doing with the agenda overperform, and that's the reason it's doubling its percentage. Like, a lot of new players are like, oh, Martell's only thing, and I played it at a bunch of store championships because of my stupid bet. And I know at least two or three different players, three being very specific, three specific players that were like, oh, you did so well with Bloodthirst, I was going to try it. But they were very new players, and when they played at regionals, they probably didn't make the cut. When you have Alex Trigg playing it and people like Jeff Cheffo, and they know exactly what they're doing with it, it's a very different situation.
You know what I'm honestly really surprised about as far as agendas go? The third place agenda in both turnout and the cut with a, well, quite a drop really in its percentage, 7 down to 4.9, but still is Conquest in third in both of those. Which, you know, is interesting. Brand new agenda. People really thought it would open up some new builds and stuff. I don't think it panned out quite like people expected, but it's still doing respectably.
It is not third in the cut.
It's not?
No. 29%, 14%. Conquest is 4.9% in the cut. Bloodthirst, Kings of Summer, of all things, and The Old Way are all above it.
Yep. My apologies. I made the mistake of thinking that this pie chart was arranged in order, like the overall turnout is, huh? Well, that is a little odd that it's not arranged in order the same way.
Well, I see what you were saying. I'm with you.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's what drops down to sixth then.
Well, 99 people have played it, and 20 people have made the cut. So it's not great. Like, people experimented, and some were successful, some weren't.
Old Way continues to be respectable, and stays fairly similar, 5.6 overall, 6.6 in the cut. That's another one I think people were fairly worried about there for a while. How's it doing in overall wins? Old Way, 7.8 in wins, so a little higher. So as far as maybe some of those qualification ratios go, I mean, we definitely have several overperformers, again, over that baseline, you know, and considerably higher than the house equivalents. So, you know, at what point does that become a worry, I wonder? It feels like the stats can be much more skewed on the agenda front, I want to point out, though, because if I'm reading this right, Defiance has a qualification ratio of about 1.75.
Yeah, but like three people played it, so
right.
Whatever.
So I'm not sure how much I trust the qualification ratio on agendas, because it's so much easier for an outlier to completely throw that out of whack.
There really should be some kind of weight associated with it. I mean, I'm not going to get into the math there, but where the higher the number of entrants, the more weight its value is given to skew that. Like, if
that's a
good
point.
20 to 1.75 and 100 people played it, that should keep its rating, whereas you'll see something where, like, three people played diminished down, like some kind of scaler. never played.
The restricted cards of popularity are, Will?
Let me scroll down to find it. Okay, so overall turnout, not really surprising me here. The most popular at almost 12% is Mira. Fear of Winter, just under 10. What do we got? LMB, or perhaps LWB, at 6.7.
Longship Maiden's Bane, for those of you who are newer.
Yes, or Longship Will's Bane, if you're me. Suppressed in Greenfield at 6.2. And Venomous Blade, surprising me at pulling up the top 5.
Hell yeah.
At 5.5. I don't think I really want to go past that too much, just reading off numbers. But I'm intrigued to see a resurgence in Venomous Blade.
I can explain it, I think.
Go right ahead.
Assuming you're running Rivers and you want a second draw source, you're probably running Jamie. Yes, fair?
Why not?
A very solid engine.
Cool, but Preston is restricted and is mostly an engine for Jamie and Martell. Martell doesn't have any other come out of shadows like bonus. Venom's Blade comes out of shadows and kills shit. And then it pops back in shadows and it comes out of shadows and you get to draw a ton off it.
Yeah, while getting some awesome control and card advantage out of the deal, I would buy it.
There are a lot of two strength guys I wouldn't mind axing right now. All the prize specialized guys, Cold Hands, just a number of
cards. Cold Hands is 3.
Whatever. The,
doesn't count. Ygritte.
But the juiciness and the prevalency of targets has gone up. All the refugees, you're seeing a response to that. Your valid targets and targets you want to hit are up. So it's a good time to run it.
The very most popular restricted card is hit by Venomous Blade.
Indeed.
So we'll talk more about Mira later, but how much are we seeing Mira? Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, we'll come back to her. There's some interesting stats with her. But she's all over. I mean, then when you look at the cut, of course, her percentage even goes up to 14.5. Actually, all of the top 5, all increase their margin and are in the same order, if I'm looking at that one right.
I'd like to talk about Fear for a second, too.
Oh, I hate that card. I mean, it's good, but I just hate it.
I'm not a big fan, but if in a Rivers meta, when you're trying to draw and play a bunch of shit, a well-timed Fear wins you games. Mm-hmm. And I like a lot that the meta realized that.
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen some compensation over the last few weeks for Rivers, I really think. I mean, that's probably a different topic to delve into, but Fear was definitely popular at our regional, if I recall.
In terms of why you're playing each restricted and why you're seeing it, I think it's very on topic. Like, we've got Rivers everywhere, and Rivers want to shit out a bunch of cards. If you basically Fear of Winter, First Snow, and Rule by Decree in some order, where Rule by Decree comes last, against Rivers, you have a huge advantage.
All right, well, anything else on the overall stats, or should we...
All right, very last thing for Restricted List. Know what I guess at least was seeing a lot of play and doing way overperforming? The Prince's Plans.
Where is the Prince's Plans in overall? There we go. 2.4%. What are we sitting at? 4.6 overall, so it almost doubles.
That might not sound like a lot, but realize if you don't know the percentages and you say it just doubled, that's a lot.
Well, yeah, but if you're just going to say things like, it doubled, then you're in the same boat as something like, you know, Defiance has a 1.75% qualification ratio. That's a problem.
I don't think Princess Plains is a problem. I think it's notable. I also think Defiance percentage is notable. I think if you're looking to build a good deck and you're a good player, Defiance is underrepresented. Houses, Baratheon first. Let's go in alphabetical order.
Sure thing.
Knights is doubling No Agenda. This is the one case that's true. But weirdly, No Agenda's got a better percentage making the cut.
Yeah, but Knights is still looking awfully hot. 32% overall, 30 making the cut. That's still pretty good. Baronites is still surprising folks, I think.
The Euro build has been a good build for a long time. People should play it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Euro build is, but I have a Lenny Knights deck.
No, Baron.
Built. Oh, Barrett. I meant to say Barrett. Damn it. But I have a Baronite's deck, and I mean, it's not great, but it can go off and win, so I can only imagine how well a refined version of that deck could perform.
Euro means, Fear of Winter, First Snow Winter, Rule by Decree.
That's the shit.
Yeah, it works well with Baronites.
Makes sense. A lot of those key characters are expensive. They're not bouncing back to hand.
Well, and then the meta made it even better, because if everyone's running rivers, you'll always have that one we need to kill, or that one slightly better we need to kill, and rack up a bunch of power.
I killed a weenie once.
How'd that go?
It was alright.
Okay.
So, the other notable Barra agenda is Knights of the Hollow Hill wasn't played much, but when it was played, it has made the cut quite well.
Yeah, what's the percentage on that right now, then? I'm looking for it here. Knights of Hollow Hill. Okay. 10 people played, 6.8%. Yeah. Jumps up to 12.1%, making that cut. That's pretty good. It doubles.
A lot of that's you, Will.
Yeah. Two of those are me. Woohoo! Hooray for skewing stats.
No, I think that just means keep playing it, right?
Yeah, till it gets reamed in the next FAQ, but we'll come to that.
I think it loses one card, gains one card, but we'll come back to that. As far as restricted cards, Fear and Mel Schemes are played an awful lot, and they're both exactly tied. So if you're choosing between the two, good luck.
Well, you mean in overall turnout or in the cut?
In the cut.
Are we looking at the same?
Am I not?
When I look at Baratheon's restricted in the cut, Fear of Winter has 30%, Mel's Scheme only 23.3%.
Holy shit, I am totally wrong. I misread that completely. So, yeah, go Fear. Fuck Mel's Scheme.
Yeah, Fear's really paying off for folks. With Narrow Escape in a distant third, it looks like.
But Narrow Escape... Sorry.
Barra tends to flop so much better than a lot of other houses. So Fear makes sense there. Fear is probably, of all the restricted cards, the one that, you know, if you are prepared for it, you can warp into the biggest early impact advantage. And Barra just naturally sets itself up where to start faster out the gate than a lot of other houses do.
So, yeah, if you're running anything basically but Hollow Hill, looks like Fear is the choice, no?
Yeah, definitely. Very interesting. Well, Does that send us to the next house?
That sends us to Greyjoy. Hey, the story of Greyjoy is the story of the old way.
Yeah. By a gigantic margin.
40% of the old way played, and then what? How much makes the cut?
45.
The next closest is 20, and then after that, 20 for no agenda, and then 10% after that.
Yeah. I do have to say, that's a big enough number that I do start to get a bit worried.
So, before we started this, I wasn't sold on Greyjoy getting an additional restricted beyond Mummers, because they're all running rivers, right? But now I am, because that's a big percentage.
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough. It's well over a third and nearing a half, especially when you look at the cut. That's definitely enough to kind of worry me. None of the other house-only agendas are going to look quite like that.
Well, but even worse, like, when you look at those restricted cards, almost a one-to-one ratio is that and Maiden's Bane. Even actually more, right? Like, what's the Maiden's Bane percentage?
Let's see, Maiden's Bane, 47% overall, 53, definitely over half in the cut.
Yeah, something else has to go. Like, we need to lose something from that deck.
Yeah. Plus, it's just kind of ugly to look at on the pie chart here. It's this nasty puke green color. It's just eating the whole pie. It's really putting me off. Yeah.
Wow, mental taxation, how pretty the pie charts are. Will's going to shake up meta.
Yeah, my criteria are pretty solid.
We should all be playing Search and Detain based on the only semi-attractive color there.
I think actually that Surgeon Detain is a great choice for Greyjoy right now. Mark was definitely playing it in Tulsa and Missouri, made the cut in both. Steven was playing it when he won in Missouri. I think it does a lot for him at the moment. Especially, with House of Dreams being as popular as it is.
No one's playing Asha at all. Like, so the other restricted choice that's not Maiden's Bane for Greyjoy is one of three plots. It's Fear of Winter, Maiden's Bane, and Fury. And it's only Fury really being played at any respectable rate. So I don't know if you go wrong with any of those three, given that each one has a higher percentage. Ooh, actually, Fear of Winter has a lower percentage, but the other two both have a higher percentage, making the gut. If you're going to choose a plot, you've got good choices.
Yeah. Probably not much more to say on Greyjoy since it's skewed so heavily in both stats.
Lannister next, I guess.
Yeah. I have to say right up front, I like Lannister. I think it's one of the better spreads.
Lannister has a functional tie, or close enough to be within a couple players, between House of Dreams, No Agenda, and Power Behind the Throne. But somewhat unexpectedly, House of Dreams has the most cuts. But
that
the other two underperform.
Really surprises me.
Yeah. I haven't really played any, I'm assuming Tunnels. Is that fair?
I assume so.
I saw a lot of it in Chicago. I mean, a lot of from newer players. I don't think I saw anyone, I don't know if anyone made the top cut with it there, but I did play at least two or three and saw several other Tunnels decks present. So, and I haven't seen anything else come out of Lannister as an HOD in a while, but...
Me either.
I expected more of Power Behind the Throne. I thought it would just roll rivers, but I guess after the store championship season when it overperformed a bit, it's slowed down because it's not doing nearly as well.
Mm-mm.
Aaron Hall kind of hurts.
Yeah, I could see that. Aren't restricted cards?
Also a pretty good split. I like seeing this one.
Castle is the most popular, but Preston, the Cache, and Pentoshi Manor all see a lot of play.
Even Fear of Winter is seen quite a bit.
Yep, in that Power Behind the Throne.
I assume so, yeah. And then in the cut, I mean, those same ones basically are the ones we're seeing in the cut, but it's a fairly equal split between all of those.
Yeah, but you know which is doing the best as far as what its ratio was before?
Definitely not Castellan, who actually drops. Let's see. Cash, right? No, looking at that right?
Even Preston is doing better than Cash. Preston and Cash are both doing very well, and I didn't expect Cash. I feel like Cash is kind of like a new player's crutch thing when you're running with all the cards Lannister has now, but apparently not. Preston is doing way better than expected.
I still really dig Lanny Knights, and I'm definitely assuming a lot of the Tunnels builds are using Preston as a restricted.
Well, if you've got a limited response to use, you've got Ultimate Skilled Hall, right?
Yep. That's what I'm playing.
Yeah. Preston gives you Valar safety and Alchemist Guildhall use.
Mm-hmm. Guildhall, which provided location control to Lannister, which had been extremely rare for them before the Westerlands.
That and the Westerlands offer, like, as much location control as you need for basically anything but the passives.
Yeah.
But Lannister runs cities.
Sure enough.
And we're on to Martell. Martell has a lot of No Agenda showing, with the other two being Bloodthirst and Conquest. We all know the build's being played, right, guys?
Yep.
The No Agenda build? I don't
know.
Conquest. What build is that? Oh, the Conquest build.
But no, we know all three. The No Agenda is basically Quentin, right?
Yeah.
Either Venomous with Jaime, or Bannerman, the DC version. Bloodthirst, and Conquest to Bracing.
Yeah. I mean, though... Of course, look in here. Those are the top ones, but there's a respectable representation of Knights of the Hollow Hill and Kings of Summer as well. It's maybe not as even a split as the Lanny stuff, but it sure looks a lot better than, say, Greyjoy or even Baratheon.
No, Greyjoy and Baratheon are semi-broken for that, but once we get to the cut, No Agenda and Conquest are underperforming a little bit, while Bloodthirst and Kings of Summer, of all things,
yeah,
really overperform.
I really like it. Doesn't surprise me.
That doesn't surprise you that Kings of Summer is that well represented, considering that Winter completely turns it off? Like,
but you're not seeing it. I thought the same thing. I was like, there's no way I'm going to play Kings of Summer. No way. I'll run Song of Fire just to not get dicked over by Song of Ice. And I thought it'd be... Song of Ice would be rampant especially out of Greyjoy and Stark with Rivers, and I just have, I mean, has anyone else?
Song of Ice's percentage Greyjoy are the drizzling shit. It's doing nothing anywhere.
I've been seeing a lot of winter splashes, not so much the winter agendas, but definitely winter splashes in all the Greyjoy I've been seeing.
You should be able to deal with in a dedicated season deck, or at least enough that you're running the agenda. You should have more commitment to it than a splash of winter. And more importantly, and it just blows my mind that you're not even seeing it. It's almost like the Dragon Pit phenomenon, where everyone thought you're going to see a ton of it, it's going to be something you need an answer for, and then it's not even like it didn't do well, it's like we didn't even see it. And it's the same thing with Song of Ice. I thought this regional season, with Rivers being what they were, you were going to see a lot of Song of Ice, and I was wrong. You just did not see it. So yeah, Kings of Summer doing well, there's almost little to no drawback to it. I would do it.
2 weeks in a row, I'm with Kyle. Like, he is so right. Song of
Armageddon is upon us.
Song of Ice should have been played a lot with this meta, and not only was it not played, when it was played, it just didn't perform. Now, like, but with that the case, and if everyone's just going to go casual winter, and when we get to Stark, we'll see that that's what's dominating casual winter. Kings of Summer is an excellent play. That extra draw, that extra gold, being able to flood the board with amazing shit without having to commit to Rivers, that's winning.
Yeah, I think Martell and Targ both have really, really good Kings of Summer builds, and I would not be afraid of running Kings of Summer right now. I just wouldn't. And especially if we all assume that something is happening to Rivers with this pre-Gen Con FAQ. If people weren't running Song of Ice beforehand, they certainly, it's not going to go up in popularity for Gen Con. Like, if you're looking at a summer build for Gen Con, not the winter matchup. I think you'll see a lot of casual winners, splashes of winter, but nothing you shouldn't be able to handle.
I mean, run the Raven Song if you think you're going to see casual winter. You'll be playing enough summer, if you're running summer dedicated, to counter it just with that one plot and your normal summer shit. This is the Raven's Message? What's that plot called?
The Lost Message.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that. Sorry. But that's where you want to go if you're running dedicated summer. Unless someone suddenly decides that Song of Ice is incredible, and the numbers have yet to bear that out in any season since it's been released, you're relatively safe.
Yeah. Well, what about the restricted cards for Martell? I'd hazard a guess, glancing at it, they look spread out very similarly to Lannister.
There are four big ones, Venomous, Burning, Bannerman, and Orphan. Every single one has performed well, except the Prince's Plan has overperformed a bit. I'm surprised about Orphan.
Yeah, seeing that much play? I can't remember the last time that I personally saw it or played it.
I know Ben runs it in his Martathion version to help push across stuff and deal with giving him a little bit more control.
I mean, I could see that.
And it was a clever play. Like, it was pretty good. But that was probably the first time I had seen Orphans in a long while.
That's the only time I really see. I mean, I guess they're good in Quinton, too. But the better version, the version from Batala, which I more or less gave Sandy, is the Fear version. But the Fear version is underperforming.
Is Fear underperforming?
Just a bit.
If we're looking at everything being run from the Martell House card, it's showing at just under 6% and making the cut at about 6.5%.
I see it being played 13%. You're looking at unknown, I think.
No, I'm looking at Fear of Winter, 13 total, 5.9%.
Oh, my mistake. I'm just illiterate. Excuse me. So it's just about even.
Yeah, it's very, very close.
Okay. So, just Orphan is overperforming them? I was really hoping Orphan would come off the restricted, so I guess
Orphan,
that's a strike against
Orphan
that.
Goes down a little. It's underperforming them by about 2%, but... Yeah, Prince's Plans is definitely the most significant change, though. Like you said, it nearly doubles.
Yeah.
Venomous Blade goes up by just a little bit. But I still think, overall, it's a pretty good spread between, you know, the top four or five of different restricted options there. So I feel that's pretty healthy.
Mr. Lloyd?
What's up?
What'd you think about Macho?
Well, I mean, we've seen it time and time again that Martell is a house with just so many weapons and so many tools. It really doesn't surprise me that, you know, the restricted cards are having a good showing. Orphan, in my opinion, is their best restricted choice. I know that Prince's Plans is broken as balls at times, but with the new errata to it, I think that keeps it in check. Venomous Blade, I've always had a soft spot for, but man, Orphan of the Green Blood, just time and time again, it's fantastic on setup. You pop it when you need it. Sometimes unfortunate things can happen to your character who's got Venomous Blade attached to him and can become unreliable, and like Prince's Plans, you need all that influence for it. So I like the showing of Orphan, but I can't say I'm surprised. Like, with all those options, there's really not a bad choice for Martell, and it doesn't surprise me that they're still on top as a house. I mean, I haven't played them a whole lot here recently. I want to, but it doesn't surprise me at all how well they're doing.
So only one thing matters with Stark: no agenda with Mira.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Hey, not you want to make a cut? You want everyone to think you're good at this game? What should you play?
Well, Mary's not a bad choice, yeah. That's for sure.
Well, what else does Stark have to choose anymore?
Well,
as far as restricted cards go,
it's either a plot or Mira,
yeah,
right?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and I just want to point out to the listeners, we already mentioned Greyjoy with Longship Maiden's Bane, but get ready for these numbers. Okay, so no agenda is almost exactly the same as the old way. 40% overall, 45 in the cut. But Mira, at an astounding 60% of the Stark restricted overall.
That's right.
69 in the cut.
So let's talk about Mira Reed here for a second. We found out that blanking a card is one of the most powerful effects in this game. Making it to where a card literally now does nothing is amazingly powerful. The other thing about Mira Reed is that sometimes she can blank two cards when it's winter. And finally, the last thing about Mira Reed is that she is very, very hard to pin down because she can pop out. So, you know, if you military challenge that Stark player, maybe they're going to be willing to lose that challenge just to pop her back into shadow. So time and time again, she can do it on a repeated basis. So unlike a Nightmares that can come in handy more often than not, is just such a great card that's just kind of a one-off, Mira can sit there and lock down some of your best cards over and over and over again. Now you add a couple of other factors, which I don't know what were in these other decks, but I'm hoping some of these are. One is Call of the Three-Eyed Crow. So now Stark has a save for her if something happens. But for me, the biggest one is Edmure Tully. I love Edmure Tully. I think he is fantastic for anyone who has a linchpin character in their deck, because you have your Mira Reed out. Maybe you marshal another one into shadows. Something happens to that Mira Reed. Now later on in the game, you can just shuffle that one in your dead pile. I mean, you can do it mid-challenge phase even. Shuffle that one in your dead pile right into your deck, and now, boom, bring out a Mira Reed out of shadows by paying the rest of her gold cost. So just a fantastic card that has only gotten better. So not surprised at all on how well she's doing right now.
Stark has been the best deck this regional season. A Stark deck has been the best deck, and Mira is the best restricted. She might be the best card in the game.
There's a reason I always list her as our example of an A card when we do chapter pack reviews.
Yeah. I mean, you take that also with one of Stark's most powerful cards other than Mira, which is No Quarter. I mean, she works with No Quarter. That's even more of a reason to choose her as your restricted card.
I run, I can't think of the name, Ghost, who's not even a good card just for the Mira synergy.
The Ghost that you return to your hand?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, he is Stark.
Really?
Isn't
oh,
he?
Wow. I totally forgot he about existed. That. Yeah.
Well, I didn't, because I run
That's
it.
That's right. There are but two ghosts.
3/3, military icon, stealth, any phase, return ghost to your hand.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic with Mira. Like, it's not a good card. 3/3 with one icon, even with stealth, is super mediocre. But just for that Mira synergy, just to get Mira going, Just to keep Mira going. If you play those two cards every turn, you're in good shape.
And God help you in the mirror match.
Mira is a must answer card. I mean, she just is. She, as soon as I see her, that becomes what my game is about for a couple turns. How do I answer her as quick as possible? Because she'll just ruin all of my other plans if I don't.
Well, now with Harrenhal, she's even better. It's like you gave Stark an even more productive trigger to send Mira back on their own at will.
Maybe they did, unless you can get her stuck out on the board and you steal her with Mel's favor and then sacrifice her to your Harrenhal. Because that is really fun.
There is that.
Or you just use Harrenhal to not let her respond, to go back in shadows, then you Valar or no quarter her or whatever. There's every house has a decent option. Like, unless she's blanking that option. Bitterbridge is a solid option. Iron Throne keeps her out. The Martell one that cancel responds when you've lost a challenge.
Impulse of Thinking? Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Sunspear Turning Grounds.
That's right.
Most houses have at least one option. Stark obviously has its own mirror, a blank mirror. But Greyjoy can drop in. Not Greyjoy. Greyjoy can cancel whatever the hell it wants.
Right.
And Targ can burn her to death. But every house at least now has at least one option for Mira.
Right. I mean, but even though there are answers, she's still just incredibly useful.
69% of the start cut. Yeah. Even though there are answers, she's 69% of the start cut.
That's an issue.
Well, I think that's also, though, something is to be said for Stark as a whole right now. They have a great icon spread between all of their characters. They have one of the most potent characters in the game aside from Mira in the Northern Cavalry flank.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a better card for Stark, too. Like, I don't think Northern Cavalry flank is their second or even their third.
I mean, are we talking about Edmure Tully? Because I love that guy.
Brienne? And
Brienne of Tarth, yeah.
Yeah.
Sir Kyle Condom.
Ah, yes.
The Condom.
The Condomator.
The rubber!
Those are fantastic cards that are very...
They are fantastic. So the thing about Stark right now is that they are just filled with just fantastic options. You know, what can happen for the future of the game? I don't think there's necessarily a problem with Stark right now as far as their power level.
Based on the cut?
They're real, real good.
Well, let's readdress this when we hit restricted cards, because I think I have an idea for it.
Sure. Does that move us on to Targaryen, then? Sure.
That does. Targaryen, lots of no agenda that is not really performing as well as you'd expect. And both House of Dreams and Knights of the Hollow Hill are showing up. Neither is doing phenomenally, but they're both doing okay. Kings of Summer has been the best performing as far as expected, as much as it shows. Targ build.
Kings of Summer?
As far as overperforming.
I don't know. Let's see. What Kings of Summer goes... Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Sorry. I was looking at Knights of the Hollow Hill at first, but yeah. Kings of Summer goes from almost 10 up to 17. Maester's Path goes from 12 up to almost 19. So.
Yeah. So, all right. Maester's Path and Kings of Summer are doing very, very well for Targ. Wasn't this supposed to be the season of Dragon Pit?
That's what everyone thought, and it never played out quite right, though. There were four of them at Tulsa. I know Kaiser was really griping because due to matchups, he was one of the Dragon Pit decks, and he played all of the other Dragon Pits, then made it into the cut, and two of the Dragon Pits made it in the cut, if I remember right, and then he and the other one had to play each other.
Dude, 39 played, 9 made the cut. And two of those were at Tulsa, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, it's rough, especially in a world with Dothraki being a legit viable build.
How viable is it if no agenda we're assuming is mostly Dothraki, right?
I would sure assume so.
Dropped 10% and the made the cut.
Well, I'm not saying that the deck is necessarily good, but I mean, I feel like I saw it a decent amount. There was one or two at Chicago. I think at least one at Iowa. There is apparently
one
at least...
It has some fantastic... So it may not be that the deck as a standalone is necessarily a top-tier deck, but it has some matchups under its belt that are just fantastic for the current meta. And right now, off the top of my head, I'm thinking really good against Stark Murder. It's plenty good against Stark Murder with those giant armies. Are you kidding? And it's plenty good against the old way. Absolutely.
I've been moneying the shit out of that with a random like Stark. I've got like four or five Stark No Agenda builds, and they've been owning Dothraki.
Yeah. Well, I guess your Stark players are better than ours. I don't know.
But I mean, like, that's why I almost brought Dragon Pit down to Missouri. I'm like, I know Zach is going to be there, and I know he's going to run Dothraki, and I lost to it anyways, but I'm like, Dragon Pit, I don't think can win that matchup.
Maybe that's the problem. Something is the problem, though. Because a lot of Stark is mainly, and Dragon Pit is very good against Stark.
I think having a viable burn deck is important for meta health. I'd like to see something played with prevalence and to do well. It's just, I feel like it's a good indicator that the meta is where people want it when there's a burn deck doing well, but...
I'm assuming the Knights of the Hollow Hill decks, many of them are probably burn.
Oh, man,
and Kings of Summer, too.
Kings of Summer is doing great. Like, a whole 21 Kings of Summer played. Almost half of those, 11 made the cut. Kings of Summer might just be where to look for its hard burn. At least by the numbers.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know how many summer decks are burn and how many are aggro. So I've seen some aggro-y stuff with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Braided Screamers are too good, I think.
Is Summer Drogo? Just play like one or two attachments, a little dabble, do ya?
Well, yeah, but the Black Raven is usually that attachment. I guess that could be true. I haven't seen it much, but it's not a bad idea.
But I've played these a couple on Octagon. I've seen some of that, like, summer aggro-y. Aggro is probably not the right word, but summer beefy? I don't know what I'm looking for here,
I'm pretty sure 3 of the 11 summer builds that made were, and he was running Kings of Summer.
Kyle, Aaron.
Yeah.
I'd start that thought over. You cut out twice for a good little chunk.
Thank you. Okay, 3, 2, fire. Kings of Summer, at least 3 of the 11, I'm pretty sure, are Nate from England, who has been running like a pared down TLV that's like 70 cards with Kings of Summer. So if you can get that to 64, 65 cards with Kings of Summer, you should be in very good shape.
I mean, yeah, so it's interesting to see how Targ is shaping up so differently than I thought any of us predicted.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, Stroms has done extremely well with Dragon Pit, but I feel like it's just been a disappeared build. Like, it's just not there.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's wrong with Dragon Pit, because it should be pretty freaking decent. I mean, a part of it could just be the amount of resources you have to put into it. You have to put cards in shadows. You have to put plenty of influence in your deck. And on top of that, a lot of your synergy relies on having those... you know, those burn events in your deck. But you would think with the rivers, it would be a lot better. But I made myself not a Dragon Pit deck, but just an Uber Burn deck that happened to have a Dragon Pit in it. But it's very slow going. So we're seeing, some rush come into play in the meta, which is great. And maybe that's a part of the hindrance there.
39 House of Dreams played, 9 made the cut.
That's some shit.
Yeah.
Right? That's not a good percentage.
So, what about the restricted, though? I think this may be the most even split between any of the houses.
Oh, yeah. Like, almost everything you could think of as a target restricted is being played. But the only two really exceeding expectation by anything measurable are the Maester's Path and Hatchling's Feast.
Very interesting. But maybe not too surprising. I mean, Rusted Maesters, been a strong build for a while. The kind of stereotypical Knights of the Hollow Hill with Hatchling's Feast remains kind of an archetype as well.
I think I mentioned him earlier this cast, but I just want to once again, like, and it was based off a New York thing from Struhal and Stroms, who are the best hard players I know. But Jeff Cheffo really needs credit as one of the best players and best deck builders in the world. Because all the Maester's Path Targ stuff you're seeing everywhere, and it's overperforming, so much of that comes down to his brilliance. So, major props. Oh, actually, and Raoul Rabs. Rabs has been building with him forever, and everyone forgets that Rabs, because he hasn't shown as well, has a good part in that too. sorry, aside.
That's all right.
No, there's nothing wrong with giving a shout out to good players. Absolutely. You know, there's good deck builders, there's good players who aren't good deck builders, and then there's both. And I think all of those people need to be recognized at one point or another. And then there's Daryl.
Who does get recognized.
Wait, like two really, really good players this week told me that your ideas on cards are way ahead of the curve and better than any of ours. If you stop making dumb mistakes, you'd be fantastic.
God, I've been telling myself that.
It's really true. That's what I keep getting told.
Well,
I want to know who's saying it.
I'll tell you.
All right.
I don't want to know.
Well, back to the stats, I do just want to throw out a weirdly interesting to me little thing. The only overall versus cut percentage I've seen so far to be exactly on point for expectations is Targ Suppressed in Greenfield, represented at 7.9% and in the cut at 7.9%.
Hmm. I'd bet that's Dragon Pit.
I'm almost certain.
That would be a good choice.
Hey, if you want an 8% chance of making the cut, run Preston and Dragon Pit.
Run Preston and Dragon Pit.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I was just going to say that I really like the fact that Preston is still seeing a lot of play. I really like the way that he was designed. I know that it's, you know, unbalanced, if you will, for not being a restricted card, I'm saying. But it's good to know that people are still playing him, even though, you know, he's a two-strength guy who's really, his only ability is really just keeping himself out of harm's way.
And he's fuel. In the coming weeks, and we've talked about this, but we're doing a top characters in the game by house, by whatever, and I think he's one of the top five characters in the game. That is a phenomenal, phenomenal card.
Yeah. I mean, he can work with other Kingsguard, too, so.
He works with
everything. Really good. Yeah, he's really good. Parting Blow, like, yeah, it's all good with Preston.
Straight Valar avoidance, so you still have Knights, Alchemist Guildhall, Jamie. What's his name? The Barra card that kneels shit or doesn't let things kneel?
Black Sails.
No.
No?
Not Black Sails. Black Sails. Okay, sorry. I don't listen.
Am I talking in Ebonics? Like, what is the problem?
Do you do that accidentally sometimes? Just start talking in Ebonics?
No, Daryl never does. No.
Wait, if you're from the middle of nowhere, fucker.
I was going to say, are you kidding me?
Alright, I think it's weird that Maester's Path and Hatchling's Feast are doing so well, because I think both are extremely reined in by Harrenhal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Cold Hands just obliterates the Maester's Path.
I haven't seen as much Cold Hands lately, have you guys?
No, not really.
I've seen him actually a lot more lately than I used to.
So weird.
Opposite.
Sample sizes.
Yep, sure enough.
It seems like I've put Cold Hands, like 1x Cold Hands in pretty much every deck I've made here recently. But it always seems like I draw them at the worst time. Like in my game against Bruno, like I drew into him like super early and there's just nothing to hit against Targaryen early game. Or really late game, but like that was the only game I ever drew him in. It's like, what the hell? This is useless.
If you're running a one-off character, you just have to be ready for that.
Yeah.
All right. So, what will you remember this as this season of?
I guess probably Rivers.
Yeah. Season of the River and the season that Rush came back. Rush came back to the realm.
I would say the return of Rush is probably the biggest thing.
I'm really surprised, and more power to you guys. A lot of people remember this as the season of the infinite combo.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things have happened this year.
It's been a very long season.
I mean, in a weird way, we can sort of thank Rush and the Rivers and, like, these infinite combos that took a while to set up. We can thank those for bringing Rush back because, you know, the players that were worried about that were like, screw this, I'm just going to win by turn two and say fuck it, you know.
Hell yeah. So I'm going to remember this as Stark Mira and Martell Bloodthirst season, but also when Targ fell apart and no one noticed, and Barra fell apart and everyone noticed.
Yeah. That's just kind of normal with Vera.
Okay, and on to the restricted list then. I think Aaron wanted to start us out on that one.
So, starting this, I'm pretty sure there's four cards that I really think will go on. Four? I'm bad at math. Whatever. Four cards that I really think something will happen to. I'm pretty sure Crossing the Mummer's Ford goes on. I'm pretty sure it has to, because, like, an errata might come, but I think they try restricting first. Am I wrong here?
Yeah, I mean, I've got more thoughts I'll come back to on errata versus restriction, but yeah, I think restriction.
I mean, Aaron's right.
Or errata, one of the two.
Yeah.
Point is, it will not be as prevalent. But I mean, like, we saw down in Missouri, they were not that big of an effect. I mean, I think you saw a lot of pot decks that were built in reaction to rivers, but rivers straight up themselves, I did not see anywhere near. I thought I would.
There was not a river in our entire top eight, and unless I'm mistaken, there were not rivers in the top eight of Tulsa either.
I mean, there was a bunch of Iowa, but yeah, I was really surprised at the lack of it down south.
There's not that many in New York either. Better players, like Greg said immediately, because we should probably just listen to him and get better. But Greg said immediately, when you know exactly what gold and initiative and claim your opponent's going to play turn after turn, if you can use that knowledge and you're a good player, you're winning that game.
Well, you've got that. And what Bruno said, too, you know, he said it about the two claim, and he said two claim plots, you know, back when he won Worlds, and he said it about the rivers now, like, he would rather have plots that do things, you know?
Yeah, but then he accidentally played Retaliation instead of a better plot. Because I think that's what cost him that regional.
Who knows? Who knows? He already had a couple wins under his belt, so.
Only two.
Yeah. He can afford to lose the hat trick.
Do I see it being restricted? You know, I don't know. After seeing our regional, and I know that ours isn't exactly like everyone else's, but there, I mean, we talked about it earlier in the year that, like, there is a downside to playing the rivers, obviously. Like, the really good players have these really tight plot decks. And so maybe the possibility of them being restricted for this year, but I think in the future, possibly not seeing Crossing on the restricted list.
All right. I really, really think Bloodthirst has to go on because, mostly to separate it and Crossing, because, the name again is just gone. If you lose Dominance, flip a new plot.
Veil Rookery.
If you use Veil Rookery with Bloodthirst and Crossing the Mummers, that plus Ariane is just insanity, so I think Bloodthirst has to be separated from Crossing the Mummers.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I can get behind that.
Yeah, I could see that.
And lastly for the on, and we don't really need to rehash this at great length, because Will and I already got into like four arguments about it. I think Desperate Measures just really has to go.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. We've already talked about it before. I mean, I can't see it going on. To me, it's a dig card, but it can put some stuff in your discard pile for you, I suppose, if that's what you're shooting for, but I couldn't see that one hitting.
I mean, like I said last week, I don't dig that, but I would just be rehashing last week's episode to go further than that.
So, to further than not rehashing, the other one is Blessed by the Maiden. At least four of the five, yeah. If not all five.
Yep, I could see that. It's quite the engine right now.
I think it's overkill. Like, I don't know if all that needs to hit, but I think if all that does hit, you cannot do infinite combos that work right now, and that's the goal.
Well, right now. I think I didn't really dig it when the idea was first brought up about things like global trigger caps, but the more I've had time to stew on it, I think the more in favor I am with that, so that you can mess with less individual cards, but still watch future issues.
I'd love it, but with rotation coming up, or whatever that replaces rotation, I'm not 1,000,000% sure it's needed, and I think they take the shorter term path of just knocking things on there to knock things down, and they can just take it off if it's not a problem anymore later. And the very last thing I really expect is for Mel schemes to come off, because Mel schemes just needs to not be there with Baron not doing a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baron needs that card. Like, as powerful as it is, you know, we have talked before about sometimes it's not about lowering the power of the other houses as much as it is to just increase the power level of another house. You know, I think that right now, like Greyjoy, for instance, Greyjoy is very strong right now, but I don't feel like they're absurd. I just think they were brought to the power level that Martell and Lannister had already been at for a long time. And Stark, really. Stark is really good now. But that same thing needed to happen with Stark back when Martell and Lannister were really good. So I think that is a great call to bring that off the restricted list for those guys.
Oh, I agree. I definitely think Baron needs some kind of boost, and Mel schemes seems like the most logical of the choices.
I mean, I would almost rather see Red Queen's Faithful, but that's just because of the type of deck I was playing recently. I think I'd almost get more mileage out of it.
Yeah, but not if you're playing Knights or No Agenda.
Right. That's why I readily admitted that I was being biased. So, I don't know. Does anything else need to come off?
And restricted cards, which makes most of them candidates to come off the list at some point. Breeze, besides of the Kraken, Red Keep,
yeah.
Westeros Bleeds, Asha Greyjoy, Bungled Orders, Red Queen's Faithful, Manning the City Walls.
Yeah, anything. I'd even maybe be considering Streetwave. She's only barely over 1% right now.
Yeah, Streetwave is there. So while she's not being used, that's fine. She's there because they don't want her in long lances.
Yeah.
So in that case, of those four, I think the one I'd most likely see come back off is Savas, just because it's something to continue this theme. It involves characters being on the field of quality. And I have to imagine Martell's going to get hit again this next FAQ. Like, I just don't see a world where Arianne does not go on the list or get nerfed to the ground, but I think we'd rather just see her get restricted. And taking another Martell card and putting it on the list, I feel like if any of those four are going to come off, it's that one. I also don't want to live in a world where you can jump into Viper's Bannerman for free. I'm just completely against that.
How good is Bleeds right now? Like, if we all have access, at the very least, to Harrenhal, is Bleeds okay, or is Bleeds not okay?
Yeah.
That probably needs to come off. But I'm a big believer in anything that goes on, and from what I think we've seen, I think Nate agrees with this, anything that goes on a list, I feel it needs to write at least one additional FAQ on the list before coming off. I mean, the last thing we want is something with Bentashis where, okay, we'll toss them on, okay, we'll take them off, okay, we'll put them back on again. I don't think that's a situation we want to be in. So I'd rather see him be slower on the uptake to say, you're right, you know, it's completely unnecessary now, the meta's fine, take it off, and go, crap, no, it really should have stayed on a little bit longer, put it back on. I think I'd rather see it right to get an assessment and then come off.
I mean, we already mentioned in passing that the Furies seemed like fairly likely candidates, either, you know, some or all.
Oh, I mean, those are the ones I'm, like, almost certain of. There's a whole bunch of stuff I'm unsure of. So, I think Savas should come off, but Princess Plan should stay on. I don't know if they will. Like, I'm not nearly, like, the other ones, I think, are the outcry of the meta, like, will happen. These, I'm just like, does Savas come off? Does Prince's Plans come off? I think Prince's Plans should stay.
I could see Savas coming off, like Kyle was mentioning earlier. It definitely puts some incentive on having characters and doing things in the challenge phase. I still kind of push that I think I could see Orphans coming back off, but
yeah,
it's probably a lost card.
Yeah, Savas is an interesting card because though it does not see play while restricted, if it becomes unrestricted, like we have seen how powerful returning a card, really a character to someone's hand is.
I top 8-ed at Gen Con with it as my restricted with Quinn, and I love
it. Yeah, that card is potent as shit. So I mean, it might come off. There's nothing wrong with that. FFG has already shown that they are willing to give a card a shot off the restricted list and not being afraid to put it back on Pintoshi Manor. So,
hi, Elbro.
I would say, I know, right? I would say if any of them to come off the Joust restricted, I mean, I would personally like to see Venomous Blade. I know that Venomous Blade, it already has a good showing. Like, all of those are really good, but I think the Venomous Blade does have a certain amount of resource that goes into it and risk that goes into it being an attachment. And, if we want to continue to push for everyone to start to play attachments and put attachment hate in their deck, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad idea. But I have seen Venomous Blade annihilate people. I'm not saying it's not powerful, but I would say if any of the cards were worthy of giving it a shot, it would be that one.
If Martell really does get hit that hard, something, I think, you have to throw him some kind of bone back, I think, but something that encourages a build that's more, I don't know what the word I'm looking for here, is healthy? Something that, like I said, Savas encourages the playing of characters, so that to me seems good. The Blade, you have to have a character to attach it to, so the Blade also wouldn't be terrible.
I mean, this may be the year that we see the Princes of the Sun Red Viper put on the restricted list, maybe. I could see them putting that and Bloodthirst possibly on the restricted list to try and get people to play Bloodthirst without Princes of the Sun Red Viper. I mean, that's pretty drastic, but I could see it happening. Am I crazy? I'm crazy.
If Princes of the Sun is restricted, I can see that. I just don't think they do Princess of the Sun in a mid-season. They tend to mid-season, like, the one in February or March is always the big one, right? Like, that's the one where a bunch of shit hits. I just feel like Princess of the Sun Red Viper, or a universal, you can only do trigger and effect three times, they'll put band-aids on it until then, and that's the one where the massive changes take place, where you have to be ready. Right now, I think, like, I hope they throw Martell a bone if they're going to restrict a bunch of Martell, but I don't necessarily know if they will. If they do, I expect Savas, because Venomous Blade is showing too well, and they have access to the numbers too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not always convinced they use them, but they do have access if they want it.
Alright. Next, Greyjoy Old Way is everywhere, and I don't think restricting the rivers is necessarily enough. It's nice, but, what's your guy's name? The guy who won, Moon Boy with Greyjoy?
Steven. Or Moon Boy, no. Sorry.
Brett Vaughn.
That was Brett, yeah.
Yeah, when Brett won, he wasn't running rivers, and there's enough stuff to draw now in Greyjoy without rivers. So I think they should lose something else, and I'm down to two cards for that, Naval Escort and Grand Good Brother, because those are the two big ones that, like, make Longship's Maiden's Bane just really ridiculous. And if it lost one of the two, I feel like that would go a long way. I don't think it would get rid of the Old Way, because the Old Way is from the percentages. I think it would go a long way to balancing it and giving other things a shot without specific tech.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Gran earlier this week, and I was like, he's not absurd, but in an Old Way deck with Maiden's Bane, he's a fine piece of work.
Well, what makes him so absurd is that he's giving you Naval Escort forever, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Sorry, I got into looking at something else, but I think I could see that with Gran as well.
Kyle?
Yep.
Yep. So.
Alright.
I mean, if not Gran, I mean, possibly restrict some of their other just super efficient characters. Damfair's Drowned. Distinguished Boatswain.
Put pictures of all the warships on a dartboard and blindfold Nate. Get him drunk.
Nate doesn't have any room on his dartboard. He's got my reanimator on the dartboard.
It's fine. He's going to hit Longship Black Wind and no one's going to care.
No, my foam drinker!
Alright. The least likely to happen, but I'm so ready, is take Mira off, because every goddamn Stark deck, 70% of them that make the cut, are running Mira anyway. Put two other good Stark cards on to balance it.
I don't think that's an argument to take her off.
Yeah, dude, I thought I was
high. I do want to see a couple
of
Venomous
Blade.
Good lord, son.
Put, put Brienne and Lewin or Brienne and Northern Cavalry Flank on instead?
You can't put Northern Cavalry Flank on there. You just can't.
Can't put Brienne because now you're hurting Barra.
Yeah, that's
okay,
yeah.
Fine. So put Lewin and Northern Cavalry Flank. Or put Lewin and Jumper Cat. Weaken them. And look, if they're just going to choose Mira anyway, or put then keep Mira on and put something else really good like Lewin or the Flank on.
Yeah.
So that they actually have a real relevant choice. Because right now, if they're running anything like a normal Stark build, it's every other house, every single other house has a serious choice to make when it comes to restricted. Stark usually does not.
Well, I think if we're talking about just putting something back on, there's nothing wrong with putting No Quarter back on there, really.
I think No Quarter might be... I'd rather another character. I can see it, but I'd rather another character.
I mean, you just can't put the Northern Cavalry Flank on there just because it discourages players running an agenda. You know, we've talked about on the show before, you know, everybody runs an agenda. There's almost no reason not to. Well, now we're seeing No Agenda become bigger. You're right. No Agenda become bigger. So they already have a built-in cancel, essentially, in that if No Agenda becomes very successful, now your Northern Cavalry Flank is garbage.
But No Agenda is already very successful. Your Northern Cavalry Flank is still good. It's still a 4-5 deadly. It's still good. And a lot of them are still running care agendas. And No Agenda is like 40% right now.
Yeah.
So it's there. Like, I don't think Northern Cavalry Flank is a reason enough anymore.
I don't know. I see where you're coming from.
More agenda hate. More agenda hate cards.
There's nothing agenda hate.
So, Lewin
Cat. Repeat
what you just said.
So, Lewin and Jumper Cat. Whatever. Like, two cards that are in every Stark deck you can think of. Daemon and Lewin.
I would look at maybe Daemon and Lewin. I see Daemon everywhere. Or maybe
awfully good.
Or maybe Daemon and Cat. Jeez, I don't know. I feel like I've been seeing Lewin less lately, but...
Just figure out a way.
Something along those lines.
If Mira's there, because she's ridiculously better than every other choice you can make. So figure some other two out that weaken Stark, because they're winning more than anybody, they're making the cut almost as much as Martell, and they're just kicking ass. Mira's almost always the choice, more than 2/3 of the time. Something else should happen.
I mean, it's really tough right now to hit Stark, and the main reason is just like they're just a consistently good deck to build. Like, they have a great icon spread right now. They have great support in their events. I'm not sure what it would take to bring them down. On the other hand, I'm not really sure that they need to be brought down, really. You know, as weird as that may sound, I think if anything, again, bring some of the houses that are struggling back up by taking things off for them.
Well, to that effect, like, Targ is severely underperforming, so can Hatchling's Feast come off?
Maybe. I mean, you already have to kneel 3 influence for it.
Targ right now.
Red Keep's put back on there. Maybe.
Harrenhal can just make it not matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harrenhal makes those event restricted so much riskier.
Yeah, Harrenhal's a pretty big deal. The possibility is there. I'm not sure.
I don't see anything really happening to Stark or Targ, but I think Targ, weirdly, because, like, my favorite errata possibility in the game is either Aegon or Viserys getting, if the only king in play, so if they stop working together, that'd be fantastic. But given that Targ is so poorly, like, showing right now, I don't really see them being weakened. And the Hatchling's Feast is such a monster, I'm not sure it's ready to come off. And everybody loves Stark, so I don't really see anything happening there either. But I think something really should.
Well, we've seen slumps. You know, every house, for the most part, has gone through a slump of a sort. Except for Martell, I guess. They've kind of always been up there. Maybe with the next cycle you see a difference here, but fixing them before the World Tournament, I can't really think of something that is going to bring them up without making a big splash in the meta.
Okay, so last little bit, I'll take these three together. I think it's too soon to do something about Daenerys Targaryen, given how Targ is performing. It's too soon for Harrenhal, which is much more balanced than people thought, but I really, really want something to preemptively be done about Wheels Within Wheels.
Before you've even seen it?
Probably not going to happen.
Whoa.
I would agree that it's probably a good idea, but I really don't think that FFG will do it. I think they've had too much blowback on the last couple of cards that they did something to beforehand, and I don't think that they will do that again.
I want them to. I've playtested with it as, like, just a regular card, and holy shit. Ridiculous combo after ridiculous combo.
I just cannot remember for the life of me. Does Wheels Within Wheels let you switch plots, right? Like, yes. Reveal new plot?
Just you. Okay.
Just you?
Any phase. Gold, Marshall, Neil a Lannister character, and reveal blockade. You can both draw. You play Wheels Within Wheels and roll by decree.
Oh, man.
You fear of winter after you've marshaled. I've got a list of like 17.
What is its prize value? Prize two? Prize three?
Two. Unless you happen to draw, like, and then I didn't draw a cancel, I just rule. I win the game. Yeah. I think I've got a list of 17 plots that I can find a way to break with this.
Yeah, Wheels Within Wheels seems a lot cheaper than, well, actually, it's the first that I've seen that, it's in any phase? Is that it?
Any phase.
Wow. Man, that makes scheming on this just look like garbage.
It's so... Oh, yeah. I wish I could remember every combination I think of.
When's that coming out? Is that coming out next month?
Last pack. Only for Worlds.
So will it be legal for Worlds?
No, I mean, it could be hit by the pre-Worlds spec.
Yeah, I don't think that they would make that legal for Worlds, but I mean, maybe I'm... That seems awfully good. Just in the few examples you gave there, really.
Threat from the East with it, where they're draw capped and can't draw any more cards, with two cards left after the first draw.
Yeah, well.
Okay, now ready? That is where
you... What, repeat what you said.
That plus Maesters, where you can already plot cycle a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And a thin deck, so you see it turn one.
Yep, could be nice. Could be really powerful. You're not wrong.
I think it's the most disgusting card they've released since the Maester's Path agenda.
I don't know. It's hard for me really just without seeing it being played. It's hard for me to really gauge how... But, yeah, the examples you gave were really good. That is the epitome of an NPE. Just like, oh, well, I'm going to count 5 gold on my turn. I'm going to marshal a bunch of stuff, and now I'm going to blockade you or play Fear Winner. And I'm going for... Yeah. Seems good.
Yeah. I mean, it's another one of those cards I had played with in the CCG and can attest to it being degenerate at the time. You know, counterplot didn't pan out nearly as bad as it used to be, but I think a lot of the plays that you're able to make with Wheels Within Wheels really offset that 2 power. I think that prized you'll take right back very quickly.
It's just I cannot imagine this card not breaking the game. I would love if they handle it before it comes out.
Props and slops.
So that was great.
Yeah, I know. You can really tell the enthusiasm is there after an absurdly long recording session, you know?
There's nothing like 2 hours of in-depth data analysis to really make you appreciate this game.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I should probably start off by slopping us, actually, because we're going to kill at least one listener. A lot of listeners like to listen to the podcast as they drive places, and this is going to put someone to sleep. Too many percentages.
But you say that, and then we're going to get a bunch of people who are like, I loved it. I loved the, like, play-by-play, the look at the meta in depth. For every person that goes, that was awful, someone will say it's awesome.
How many awesomes do we have to outweigh the deaths?
I don't know. Depends on who dies.
Fair enough.
I mean, is it a Tyrion? Is it a Pauper? I mean, there's different weights and values here to a death.
Could be anybody. Maybe it's Tywin. Tywin himself.
What would that be?
Weighty.
But way to go with that props and slops intro. People are going to know exactly what segment we're doing. It is appreciated.
Yeah, exactly. But speaking of Tywin Lannister and weightiness, brings me to the first thing that I wanted to prop this week, because they're gold. Okay, they're not really gold, but thankfully they're not shit either. I'm talking about Shire Post Mint. Yeah, that was weird, but I'm going to roll with it. They contacted us a while back and made sure we knew about the gaming coins that they offered, because they pushed those out. I saw them announce them on Card Game DB, and I think maybe they posted somewhere else that I saw too. What was that, a few months ago? Did you see that announcement?
These gaming coins have been out for a little bit.
Yeah. And they mentioned that they were coming out with these hand coins. Now, I thought they meant like Hand of the King at first, and I was really confused, but I was like, okay, whatever. Like, I'll go ahead and buy a set, you know, because they mentioned they'd send us some a little early to check them out before they were available to the public and stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll order a set of everything and I'll check them out. By the way, that still winds up being pretty expensive to order a set of all of the houses and the hand coins. But they're actually the Gardeners, the folks that were kings of the Reach before the Tyrells, which I'd kind of forgotten about till I read the little insert that they came with. And did you wind up ordering a full set of everything as well, Kyle?
I did. And the nice thing is, like, I've seen the company before, and they've always sold, like, I don't know what the word I want to use is, like, boutique coins. Like, they sell, like, the Faceless Man coin, and, like, an actual gold dragon, and some other coins are, like, they're notable throughout Thrones, but it's always been, like, $20 for, like, one coin. I mean, they're nice, like, great collectible coins, but they weren't something that you could necessarily practically carry over to the game, like, as a game accessory without dropping insane amounts of money.
Yeah, you couldn't have a dozen of them for gold without having spent $100.
Yeah, I think the Faceless Man coins, $20, that may be a lie, but, if you think about having 15 of them at 20 a pop, I mean, you are now financially committed to these power tokens. I mean, they are sweet, they're all sweet coins, but now they have these littler ones that come in packs of 30 and are ready 20.
20, yeah.
That are like ready to go that you can just use in a gaming sense right off the bat. Same with these hand coins, which are by far and away my favorite.
Oh, I agree. Because the house coins are the size of what, like a dime?
I would say about a dime.
They have pretty good detail on them though, but they're small. And they mentioned in the little insert, you know, they can't really mention like power counters and house cards and stuff, but, you know, they mentioned that you can fit three across in a row on, like, a standard-sized playing card or something like that, and I was like, they're planning these for power counters.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, they remind you of kind of the cardboard little blue ones are about that size, and they could fit on the resin house cards. They fit on most of the house cards we use. They're great for that. The hand coins I would definitely use as gold, but they are phenomenal. They're about the size of a quarter. They're, I think, solid brass. I mean, they're real shiny. I took them down. Used them in Iowa and I used them at Missouri, and everyone was just like, had to stop, had a look at them. I mean, they are slick shit for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're sweet. I gave out a few of the extras. Like, I pared my sets down to 15 each just for power and gave the other 5 out as regional prizes. And I know at least one person that won some asked who had made them and said they were going to go buy sets of their own now. So, you know, people think that they're pretty friggin' sweet, and I have to agree. They have that really nice clink to the hand coins whenever you're, playing, well, maybe I'm the only person that plays with my gold an awful lot over the course of a game, but they feel good when you do it.
No, they're phenomenal. And I'm a big believer in, I think, a lot of this game, and hopefully if some of the audio from talking with Bruno eventually makes it onto the podcast, I talk with him all about that psychological advantage that comes with being John Bruno and that clout. and how you can mentally get a leg up on your opponent. And I feel that, like, swag for me does that. I feel so much better when it's, you know, these are my sleeves and my tokens and my, like, ensemble, and I have, like, a pregame ritual, and it all kind of feeds into this pumping yourself up mindset, and I just feel so much better when you're using something that's, you know, it's awesome, it's cool, and I feel like it does mentally, like, kind of pump me up a little bit. And so I'm a big believer in swag, and I'm a big believer in, like, any little bit helps. I know that may seem silly to some people, and, I mean, I'm no psychologist, but, like, it helps. I saw these, and I was like, this is awesome, and I've been looking for something like this, especially for gold counters, for a long time. And they messaged us and said, hey, we got these new coins for sale, and I was, I mean, just thrilled. Because it's one more piece that can just add to my, like, collection that just makes me feel like I'm going in to win this game and be the badass that world champions are.
Yeah.
It's like dressing for success, but for Carter.
Oh, Kyle?
Yeah?
Okay. You kind of cut in and out. I got, it's like dressing with success, and success was the last word.
Oh, sorry. But it's like dressing for success, but with your card game. If you play like $1 million and you feel like $1 million, and you look like $1 million, I feel like you, I believe you do better, you perform better, your confidence is higher. So, that may be total crap, but I believe in it, and yeah. I think, like, super. And also, just a general prop, I mean, Shire, especially the, like, Shire Pose for leading the way, but getting some third-party owns, like, merchandise and swag and stuff that a company, I mean, took the time to take a nod and come out here with customers and people that are enthusiastic. Let's make a product for them. I mean, obviously, anyone who reads the books can collect the coins, but especially this new game was designed with, like, us and the board game in mind. And I just think that the game is at a place where, you know, people talk about and the meta is growing and stuff. Well, obviously, this is a huge positive sign for this game when other companies besides FFG are taking notice of this great body of players.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's great to see that there's enough of a market now to start having some extras. You know, it's nice to see the FFG games getting some respect.
It's wonderful, and props to these guys for reaching out to us. And it is a quality product. I mean, when you see the price tag on some of them, it gets a little concerning. You're like, I mean, it's hard to buy, like, a coin blind, like the Faceless Man coins, and just be like, oh, I hope this is cool. But, like, having touched them now and seen them, they are all, I mean, totally worth it. Like, it is really a nice quality product. They use real, like, the metals that they list. they're true to form. Like, all the coins are, I guess they've talked, from reading the little bit, I assume they've talked to Martin and read enough of the books to, like, these coins are really representative of, like, the different regions. And you believe the coins are, like, something they would use. I mean, they look realistic.
Yeah, I think so. Like, they really researched their stuff.
Yeah, the story for these, the Gardner hand coins was really nice. I mean, it's because, like, when you get the coins, this little pamphlet, it tells you about, like, the last the battle of the last king of the Reach and the Lannisters versus the Targaryens. And it was a really neat little story to read about the coins and the history of, like, the king that they represent and stuff. Like, it really put, like, time and effort into these.
Yeah.
And that's not just, like, someone trying to make a quick dime.
Well, and I love the tidbit that features one of my favorite characters, the Queen of Thorns, because it mentions that the Gardner coins are the same diameter as a gold dragon, but are thinner, so they're only worth, I think it said, like, two-thirds as much or something like that. But every time she travels, she takes, like, sacks of Gardner coins, and every time there's, like, a toll collector that pisses her off, she pays the toll in Gardner coins, and they never notice that they aren't gold dragons, which I thought was hilarious.
That's funny. But it's also a very Queen of Thorns moment.
Yeah.
There's a reason she's that crazy grandma we all wish we had.
Exactly.
But no, so yes, just to, like, wrap that bit up, I mean, super excited, like, huge props to Shire Post for making these and for reaching out to us. And hopefully, you know, we can get the word out more. If anyone else out there makes a cool Thrones product and, like, wants to, like, get the word out, let us know.
Definitely.
I mean, that's why we're here, as part of the community, and if someone wants to be a part of that, I know we all would love to help facilitate.
And props to that new guy, Sparrow or something.
Yeah.
Great idea for rotation.
Yeah, I actually thought that was awfully strong. I mean, not the least of which because he acknowledged that he took the idea I had mentioned of the dual decks and then expounded on it and made it even cooler, so.
Yeah, money to that guy.
So what is this idea?
Well, that is getting way off topic.
It is massively long. Everyone check the Card Game DB forums. It's on a topic there. I will actually give you the name in about 3 minutes. All right, I found that guy.
Okay.
He is Sparrowhawk, and the topic is an alternative to rotation or reboot. Check it out, and the idea is fantastic, so give it a read. It's long, but it's worth it.
Definitely.
Just having people thinking about it, I think we're getting close enough. I mean, November is just around the corner. This is the guy getting married in October. But getting a mind ready for and just mentally preparing and thinking about what a world with rotation is going to be like is probably good for anyone looking for that competitive edge. I mean, yes, there's not a whole lot from November to next store championship season, but the less flat-footed you come off, the better. So get thinking about it. Try and imagine what the power level is going to be like. I try and start thinking of some decks with these different scenarios. Anytime something, a cool rotation comes up, I try and think about, okay, what are the five best decks I would liken it to be? Or what are the five decks I think are going to jump out early with this in mind going to be? What cliche decks are going to take a big hit? And try and look at some creative things and see what it'd be like. Because it's cool to play with. I mean, it's almost like an alternate rule set. So, I have a lot of free time at work, so I guess that seems really lame now that I think about it. But, I don't know. Reading about thoughts on rotation, I think, are really cool.
Whatever. Want lame? I actually dreamt about Thrones the other night.
Wow. That is lame.
Yeah. It was the worst. I woke up and was like, what the fuck was that?
I have more than a few props. I will make them relatively quick, and I'll just add them all into one awesome prop. Robin and I today just went ahead and we had a treat yourself day. So we went out, bought some video games, some books, and some comic books. So I picked
nice.
Up. Yeah, I know, right? It was crazy. We're just like, let's go. Let's go do this. So I picked up, a book called The Expanse, The Leviathan Wakes, which is supposed to be a really good sci-fi book. So I'm really excited about that. And then I picked up a couple of comic books. One was Why the Last Man.
Great.
Ewan Gorley suggested that. So we picked that up, and then I also picked up another one. I can't remember the name of it. It's super sci-fi. I told the guy I really liked East of West.
Saga?
I was looking for Saga. Man. He was out of Saga, and he said, hey, you need to try this, and he's going to email me whenever he gets Saga in. I can't remember the name of it. It's in the other room. I can't remember, but it's supposed to be really good. So I said I'd try it. I picked that up and then picked up Monster Hunter Ultimate 3 or Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, whatever, for DS, which is supposed to be an awesome game with like a great community. So I grabbed that, and then Robin grabbed Civilization on PS3 and one of her Phoenix Wright Apollo something another that I can't remember the name of. And then she picked up like a Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So apparently it's Pride and Prejudice with some type of zombie twist to it.
Yeah,
so,
I've heard good things.
You know, for anyone out there who hasn't had a shopping spree of books, comic books, and video games, you should go out one day and do that. It is a blast.
I'm a little jealous. That does sound awesome.
Yeah. Well, what do you got, Aaron?
I'm going to prop Cards Against Humanity. Cards Against Humanity is ridiculously fun. It's, if you've ever played Apples to Apples, it's that but dirty. And it's got things in it like Pac-Man uncontrollably guzzling cum.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is fucking fantastic. Maybe it's Maybelline. Excuse me. Maybe it's blank. Maybe it's Maybelline. Maybe it's Pac-Man uncontrollably guzzling cum. And maybe it's Maybelline.
One or the other. It can't be both.
The game is incredible. It's fairly expensive and worth every penny, especially because you can play it at work parties because it seems innocent.
Yeah,
it is. When your boss says maybe it's Pac-Man and guzzling cum, oh yeah.
Yeah. You need to make sure that you have a clear conscience when playing that game. There are some very dark jokes in it.
Oh, yeah.
Try to chill out and try to not get offended. Like, there are some, but, like, it's a great game. Those guys are awesome. They donated, like, every penny they made in their first print run or something like that to Wikipedia, like, for telling, I don't know, they had a bunch of, like, fun facts and stuff like that. So those guys are awesome. Really cool game.
And Will?
Boy, you know, I'm not exactly sure what I should be, propping here right at the moment. I feel like I had some stuff marked down, but instead, I think I'm gonna prop the Lord of the Rings LCG. Got the chance to play that a couple times recently. It'd been a while. And it's a blast. So it's a good, nice little secondary game to have to pick up with some friends. It's a nice change of pace from Thrones.
Yes, it is. Anybody else got anything? Alright.
Only a slop.
Go for it.
I love basketball. I'm going to slop ESPN.com/NBA because every time I click it, there's this really creepy picture of Drake.
Okay. You did remind me of another prop.
Oh, here we go.
You mentioned ESPN. I'm definitely going to throw out a prop to the German soccer team because that was a pretty great final game. I suppose, ought to throw out some props to Argentina. I'm less partial to them, though I like Messi quite a bit, but I had Germany picked as my favorites to win at the beginning of the tournament, and they lived up to my expectations.
Yeah, they did a really, really good job.
Oh, and personal slops to me, because I griped when Klose got pulled out and Götze got put in, and then, of course, you know, like 5 minutes later, Götze scores the winning goal. So I was like, all right, well, that shows what I know.
Nice. All right, well, thank you for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump. Feel free to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/twochampsandachump, or Two Champs, One Chump, my mistake. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/twochampsonechump. Email us if you have any ideas for the show, questions, comments, anything like that at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. And with that, we're going to go ahead and fly through the Danger Zone!
Two. Son of a bitch, Kyle. I would like to be able to edit this as easily as possible, unless you want to take over editing duties.
Nah, you got it.
Thank you.